Page 49. B, consciousness. In Sanskrit, Vijñāna. V-I-J-N-A-N-A. Vijñāna. In the previous chapter, we studied the mind, citta. We studied the mind, which has five names, five different functions. activating mind, and evolving mind, reproducing mind, and analytical mind, and continuing mind. Page 48. This consciousness, Vijñāna. So in the previous life, if you use a mind, there are two kinds of mind, citta and consciousness, Vijñāna, too. Vijñāna is a rough nature of consciousness, rough nature of the mind. And if you say citta, it is a very, smooth nature of mind. let's read chapter 40. B, consciousness. What is called consciousness, Vijñāna, is the continuing mind. Because of their deep-rooted attachment, ordinary men imagine that I and mine are real and cling to them in their illusions. As soon as objects are presented, this consciousness rests on them and discriminates the objects of the five senses and of the mind. This is called Vijñāna, the differentiating consciousness, or the separating consciousness. Or, again, it is called the object-discriminating consciousness. The propensity for discrimination of this consciousness will be intensified by both the intellectual defilement of holding fast to perverse views and the affectional defilement of indulgence in passion. Okay, first, what is called consciousness is the continuing mind. So, consciousness is, in this case, a continuing mind, which is one of the five different functions of citta in the previous chapter. Okay. Continuing at the last function of mind in the previous chapter, page 48, you can see the fifth is called continuing mind, for it is united with deluded thoughts and continues uninterrupted. So, in the human life, there is something continuous, so-called citta. They regard it as very subtle nature, subtle and smooth nature of mind. Okay, constantly there. Consciousness is constantly there. And then, if it appears on the surface, this is called consciousness. Okay? Vijñāna. The rough nature, regarded as rough nature, coarse nature of
consciousness, mind. Okay.
So that's why he says the consciousness is the continuing mind. So in other words, our usual rough nature of consciousness cannot stop. You cannot stop functioning. So all this rough nature of consciousness is functioning always. Without this, we cannot exist. So rough nature and smooth nature of the mind is always exist. Okay? Because of the of their deep-rooted attachment, ordinary men imagine that I and mine will and cling them to their illusion. Why the mind, the citta, and also vijnana exist constantly? Because it is rooted very deeply in the human life. How we can know that there are two ways we can see. One is I as a subject, and also mind means object. We see the object, there is very naturally two self-consciousness occur, so-called I and also the minds, you know, the attaching to object. That functioning of that attachment really deeply rooted in the human consciousness. Okay. So the I is in the Buddhism we call self-attachment. I. Self-attachment. And the mind is called Dhamma-attachment. Dhamma-attachment. You attach to the object. That is called Dhamma-attachment. If we attach to ourselves, so-called the self or I, that is called self-attachment. So that is, vijñāna, and also when that I and minds occur, six sense organs separately, functions. If I, organs, see this microphone, eye organ can see this microphone, but not ear, not mouth, okay? Not body, not mind. So only eye catch this, the microphone. So sense organ, six sense organs function completely separately. That's why vijnana is sometimes called separating consciousness. Okay? Separating consciousness. And also, this vijnana functions always seeing object. This vijnana always has its own object. Without object, this consciousness doesn't function. So always, the vijnana, they function with its own object. So that's why vijnana is called object discriminating consciousness. Okay. But that object, the object discriminating consciousness or separating consciousness, both are not separate. In this case, one mind. Anyway, not one mind. Yes, one mind. They don't have a separate substance. Okay. So So here, as soon as objects are presented, this consciousness rests on them and discriminates the object of five senses and of the mind. This is called Vijñāna, the discriminating consciousness, or the separating consciousness, right? Or again, it is called the object discriminating consciousness, means object, it has constantly its own object. Then that it works. How? Six sense organs separately work, and also consciousness anyway catch the object and think and judge. So very naturally, that Vijñāna is called sometimes object discriminating consciousness. A propensity for discrimination of this consciousness will be intensified by both the intellectual defilement of holding fast to perverse views and the affectional defilement of indulgence in passion. So I think Vijñāna is intensified. Anyway, Vijñāna is carried on constantly by two defilements. One is very intellectual, the other one is very affectional. Intellectual is when you see microphone, very naturally, this is a microphone, you can analyze object very intellectually. How it works and how it is produced in itself. Okay. Very intellectual. But on the other end, affectional, the defilement means if you see microphones, very naturally you are attached to the microphone. Okay. Not emotionally. So intellectually, you understand pretty well, this is a microphone, this is I. But emotionally, you cannot see the microphone and I, creating a little space. But immediately, we attach to the microphone and grasp it, so-called mind. That is always emotionally and also intellectually. So in Buddhism, generally, we have to practice anyway for a long time, so-called from this life on throughout the countless lives, the bodhisattvas, ancestors practice constantly. Because we have to take care of this intellectual defilement and also affectional defilement. It's very deeply rooted. So, that's why he says intellectual defilement of holding. What is an intellectual defilement? Is so-called holding fast to perverse views. Perverse view means intellectually, if you see the microphone, we understand the microphone. We say, I understand it. If I talk with Bob, I say, yes, I understand what you say. But actually, I don't understand. I don't understand exactly. You see the microphone, I see the microphone, everybody looking at the microphone. So everyone says, yes, it is, microphone. But how do I know? Microphones, they both they understand. No, I don't. Because both experiences is different from me. Do you understand? So everyone look at the microphone in a sense equally, but individually understand the difference. Okay? So very naturally, I don't understand Bob's understanding of microphone. So this is holding, but nevertheless we say, I understand microphone. Okay? And the Bob says, I understand microphone. Yes, I am. So finally we fight. This is holding fast to perverse views. This is intellectual understanding. Next, affectional defilement of indulgence in passion. Passion is very strong emotions. Buddhism sometimes we call thirsting desires. Thirsting desires. Very naturally. Naturally, deeply coming up. Very strong emotion. Impulses of emotion. So from this point, consciousness is functioning of our mind, in everyday life on the ground of self consciousness. And create discriminating the world, separate world of subject and object. This is consciousness, our consciousness, so-called vijnana. Okay. And also this vijnana is intensified by two defilements, intellectual and affectional. For instance, and also the emissions of the conscious continuing mind in the previous chapter. And the mind is functioning in five different ways. One is, last one is continuing mind. That continuing mind is called, anyway, vijnana. Rough consciousness, rough nature of consciousness. But on the other hand, this continuing mind has two types of mind. One is rough nature of consciousness and also smooth nature of consciousness, so-called citta. And this consciousness, anyway, intensified by two defilements, okay? For instance, the love consciousness, love nature of consciousness is kind of discussing about the ideology or discipline of certain religions and philosophy and ideology. And then we really strongly attached to a different teaching of religions, very strongly. But actually, according to this, teaching, the awakening of faith, I think we understand each single teaching of religion is fine, but it is already perverted. Perverse view. We have a perverse view because we never know. We never know object as it is exactly. We never know the teaching of religion exactly clearly. No, this is not opportunity for given to the human being. No, human being just receive this object and the teaching and whatever it is openly, anywhere openly. That's what we can do. Just openly and try to understand as best as we can deeply. Try to approach, constantly try to gain access to the object as it is constantly. Okay? But we never know. We never know. We never know. That's why we have to understand it. If you know, it's not necessary to try to understand. So constantly, we try to gain access toward object and any kind of teaching and ideology, whatever it is. Because always we receive object in, reflected in our mind first. And then we understand what? Not object. Image of the object reflected in your consciousness. That's it. So this is very individual. So you don't understand the microphone. No. That's your understanding. That's why if you see religions and believe it and understand it in very naturally, intellectually, we try to hold fast to this individual religious teaching, so-called Buddhism and Christianity and Islam, etc. And then try to hold fast to it. This is so-called, anyway, attachment. Very strong intellectual attachment. The more you understand it, the more attachment. The more you work hard, the more you attach to your own life, which you have experienced. So, very naturally, there is intellectual defilement. Okay? Very strong delusion there. And then next, we say, this is my religion. Then you have your religions. Your religion is wrong. My religion is right. Always there. This is called Dharma attachment. Very emotionally. Emotionally. You cannot stop it. That's why I'm always fighting. I think you should understand, I don't mean in a Buddhism, the main practice of Buddhism is to have, to practice egolessness, okay? But egolessness is not to destroy, you know, reasoning or one's reasoning or subjectivity of cognition, self. Because wherever you are, enlightened or unenlightened, you have to see, you have to have your object. So very naturally, there is a subject and the object, then we say, my existence. If you exist in this world, then naturally, subject and object there. So even though you attain enlightenment, still there is an object. So if you see the object very naturally, oh, microphone, we say. And then if you say microphone, immediately there is a subject, because object there. If there is no object, subject is gone, naturally, automatically. But always we see the object, so very naturally there is subject. But in the Buddha says, I. Okay? If I see the object, Buddha says, I see microphone. But in subjectivity of his cognition has nothing to do with attachment, self-attachment. No. Just a simple word. I see. When he sees the microphone, immediately I see the microphone. That's it. So there is only simple function of, the subjectivity of cognition. But ordinary people see the microphone, say, I see microphone. Then, attach to the subjectivity of the ordinary people's cognition, they relate very closely, strongly with attachment. So, we cannot see the microphone simply, because there are two attachments. Defilements, one is intellectual and emotional defilements. Okay? Very natural. So this is subjectivity of ordinary people's cognition has very close, strong relation with self-attachment. Very self-attachment. That's why it's very complicated. Okay? Very complicated. So the egolessness is not to destroy subjectivity of cognitions. Without subjectivity of cognition, you cannot exist. The question is, how can you present subjectivity of cognition as simple as it is? Just there. That's pretty hard practice.
But this is important for us.
How can you present yourself right in front of the individual, the different teaching of religion, so-called Buddhism? How can you present yourself? How can you manifest yourself in the realm of different religions, so-called Buddhism, and Christianity, etc.? So all you have to do is you should present subjectivity of cognition as simple as it is. So even the Buddhism, you cannot say, this is mine. No. Yes, it's yours. It's your belief. But you cannot say, this is my belief. If you say, this is my belief, very naturally, it has its own partner. Okay? Partner means something different opinions, different religions. That's why you say, mine. Very naturally, different persons' religion there. So if you say my religion, that attachment invites different others' religions. So very naturally, there is other religions and your religions. Okay? Next problem, you have to do is face each other as simple as you can. You should present yourself as simple as you can, but we don't. Okay? So we say, this is my religion, so hold it and then fight it. Even our religions. We do always. So that's why here is the rough nature through the rough nature of consciousness, so called Vijnana, there is a very strong attachment. That attachment is called intellectual defilements and affectional defilements. And then in many ways you can experience this one. And also that is really troublemakers in your human life. Okay? But on the other hand, the smooth nature of consciousness is a little different. So-called smooth, for instance, smooth nature of consciousness doesn't have particular attachment. Self-attachment and Dhamma attachment. It doesn't have particular attachment, strong attachment, no. Just work. Just the mind works simply. Okay? For instance, if you go to if you want to be the dancer, you go to the school, and under the guidance of teacher, you always move your hands and legs and the bodies. Well, anyway, completely beyond like or dislike, you always move your hands and the legs and the whole bodies. Beyond good or bad, right or wrong, beyond intellectual defilements or emotional defilements, you just move. This kind of movement is simple function. Okay? Very simple. Beyond intellectual and emotional defilements. This is kind of a smooth nature of consciousness. Okay? Very smooth. So it's always happening. Or sometimes if I snap my fingers right in front of your eyes, your eyes immediately close. This kind of movements is completely beyond. It's smooth nature of consciousness, beyond your control. Or memories, okay? Memories, you carry the memories. How do you carry the memories? I don't know. We don't know. And also, when you do that, then one of the memories pop up, comes up immediately. What you have forgotten already. But when you do that, then memories comes up. This is completely beyond your control. That is a kind of, smooth nature of consciousness. And also, discovery of something, new ideas. Or when you do that, then new idea coming up, Have you ever experienced
pretty nice idea come up, you know, when you do Zazen. So you really appreciate Zazen. it's probably immediate, just like a computer, you know. Coming up. So you don't want to forget it, that's why you want to take a note, you know. I always say this, that kind of meditation is part-time Zazen. And also inspiration. Inspiration is also the nothing but the smooth nature of consciousness. Okay? It's very inspiration coming up. When you see somebody, something you can see, you can touch, you know, you don't know what it is. If you see somebody immediately, you are moved. I don't know what, by what. But this is inspiration. Or you say intuition, okay? Intuition. Or sometimes, we'll say many things. I am presenting the example, okay? Mysterious experience. This is also beyond your control. Mysterious. When the, one of the, your very close relatives is about to die, and the moment he dies, the moment he or she dies, immediately you can get, wherever you get, some information, experience, seeing him or her, or something happens. This kind of mysterious experience is completely beyond your control. Or I mentioned before, you can get the very new nice ideas what you will want to do in the future, you know. This kind of thing, idea coming up. This is also one of the examples. Also, lifestyle on the hard life, easy life, or neutral life, or pleasant life, or unpleasant life. Retributed from your past life. For instance, wherever you may go, suffering is suffering, but if I live in Japan, and you know, I can live in Japan, and little easier than living in the United States, etc. Okay? But I, strictly speaking, I don't know which is better. But the very briefly understand my life. Why don't you live in Japan? Because I am Japanese. Why do you come here, you know, to United States? I don't understand anyway. But if I am already here, so I have to live in the United States. So very naturally different bitterness and different, you know, happiness and unhappiness I have to experience. I don't know why I have to experience this bitterness or unhappiness or happiness. I don't know. Probably this is my lifestyle distributed, okay, from my past life. So probably in my past life, probably I was American. Probably. So, very naturally, I have to live in the United States, something like that. So this is also, we say, karmic life, okay, in Buddhism. Or retribution of karmic life. From what we can experience happiness or unhappiness or neutral. So this is called the very smooth nature of mind. So-called attachment, Dhamma attachment. Dhamma attachment is very smooth nature, very subtle, because you have memories. So memories coming up. Because you have experienced before, so very naturally, lots of memories in your mind, so memories coming up constantly. So this is, memories comes from what? Dhamma attachment. It's from a Dhamma attachment. In other words, attachment to object. Simply or complicatedly, it doesn't matter. Any attachment to the object. So very natural, we have a lot of memories and inspirations and ideas. We have a lot of stories, big stories, huge stories. And this is the Dhamma nature, Dhamma attachment is going in the deep level of human existence. And who take care of? Who deal with this kind of system? Who control this one? Well, this is called probably Arya Vijnana. It's very basic. Our consciousness, Arya Vijnana, which is going constantly in this book. Temporarily, it is named as continuing mind, continuing citta. So it's not your business. This is inspiration and memories are going. You can carried by you, but this is not your business. This is Arya Vijnana business. But when it is manifested, it's your business because you have to deal with it. So you cannot ignore. So it's not your business in a deep sense, but it's your business. So you have to take care. and also in Buddhism, sometimes I like a cigar, something like that. Okay, I like sushi, you know, something like that. They like or dislike is sometimes pretty beyond human control. Even though you say, I like a cigar, at that time I tell myself, don't think in that way. Okay, you should think intellectually. I don't like cigar. But I can't control. Do you? So, it's impossible to think I don't like a cigar. Because I like a cigar. And just like a George and that old man. Burns. George Burns always smoking cigars. Even though he's 9 years old. Yeah, he's... Very natural, you know, like or dislike is there, beyond your control. So it's very deep. So from where the like or dislike or affective preference come, it's very deep. But on the other hand, when it appears on the surface of human life, it is your business, so you have to take care of it. That's why very natural, there is a smooth nature of consciousness, citta, and also rough nature of consciousness. Very naturally, there are two kinds of consciousness that can be considered. And both are not separate. Both are anywhere working together. That's why in this book, this book doesn't analyze separately. But they deal with two different type of consciousness as one. Okay, next paragraph. The 49, the second line from the bottom, that the deluded mind and the consciousness arise from the permeating of ignorance is something that ordinary men cannot understand. The followers of the Hinayana with their wisdom likewise fail to realize this. Those bodhisattvas who, having advanced from their first stage of correct faith by setting the mind upon enlightenment through practicing contemplation, have come to realize the Dhammakaya, Dhamma body, Dhammakaya. Dhammakaya means the truth itself, okay? Can partially comprehend this. Yet, even those who have reached the final stage of bodhisattvahood cannot fully comprehend this. Only the enlightened ones have thorough comprehension of it. Why? The mind, though pure in its self nature from the beginning, is accompanied by ignorance. Being defiled by ignorance, a defiled state of mind comes into being. But though defiled, the mind itself is eternal and immutable. Only the enlightened ones are able to understand what this means. In this paragraph, okay? In this paragraph, the main point, what it wants to say is, you know, ignorance. We create the human life interdependent interconnections with phenomenal world and noumenal world. Noumenon. Phenomenon, noumenon. Okay. So called, according to this, the book, so called Tathagatagarbha and also Arya-Vijñāna. How do we create Arya-Vijñāna, which means samsara, okay, phenomenal world? It is produced by means of, you know, the ignorance. So there is only one mind, but there are two aspects of human life. But it's very close relation. They are very closely working together. So we don't know how. So in the main point, this paragraph says that is that you never know from where ignorance comes. How it works. No. So what is the ignorance? We don't know. So only the Buddha can know. So by virtue of the study and the practice, and then you say, I understand the ignorance. It is deluded. Okay? Or you say, I understand the Buddha's teaching. Yes, you do. But you cannot attach to it. Because you never know. You have no chance to understand what it is clearly. If you know, it is perverted. So that's the paragraph mentions. Okay. So from this point, you should be very clearly confirmed that where you are standing. Okay, that place is very important for us. Where you are standing. The standing place where you stand is the greater opportunity to understand you and object clearly? None. So your place, the place you where you stand is nothing to know. This is your location. You stand up. Okay? That's why very naturally in this book, what is important for us, for human life? Faith. So you have to jump. Anyway, faith. Believe it. Believe. Come up very strong. So this book, toward the end, we can study the anyway, faith, practice of faith. In the explaining of faith, very natural, strongly. So let's read. What's the deluded mind and consciousness arise from permeation of ignorance is something that ordinary men cannot understand. Means that the one mind, there is a one mind, and one mind which with two aspects. One is Tathagatagarbha, which its nature never change. Water is water. Okay? But on the other hand, when that the water moves, immediately water creates something else, something different. That is called waves, regarded as arevijñāna. That is samsara. Okay? How we can create this samsara? It says permeation of ignorance. Permeation. So the ignorance is always there. You know, before you think from where it comes. So it's very clear. We say beginningless, okay? It, this book says later, you can know. Beginningless is, look at the page 50. And the last paragraph, he says, suddenly occurrence, he says, the last paragraph, suddenly a deluded thought arises. This state is called ignorance, okay? So ignorance is suddenly occurred, but this suddenly is not exactly hit the mark of nature of ignorance. But another expression is beginningless. Beginningless means you cannot chase after, you cannot trace back, or you cannot trace to the source of, anyway, ignorance from where it comes. No. Beginningless means regardless of whether you are conscious of it or not, it's already here, now. Okay? Here, already now. But when you see that ignorance, we want to know from where it comes. If you don't know, we don't want to accept it. But Buddhism, this book says, it is a beginning. This means no way to discuss. It's here, with us, in the present, in the moment. It's already. Okay? So that is a very important point, so-called suddenly occurrence, or beginningless, a different expression we use. Okay? So, that's why ordinary man cannot understand. It's very difficult to understand how, what is the unity, merging of arevijñāna and tathāgatagarbha. We don't know how they exist in peace, in harmony together. No. So the followers of Hinayana with their wisdom likewise fail to realize this. Those bodhisattvas who, having advanced from their first stage of correct faith by setting the mind upon enlightenment through practicing contemplation, have come to realize Dharmakaya, can partially comprehend this. So still there is a possibility to know, but you have to, anyway, they climb a lot of ladders according to the system of Buddhism, so-called 52 steps. You know, I think that some of you have list of the practice in Buddhism generally. Some of you have, do you? Yeah. 10 stage of, what would you say, faith, you know, 10 stage of security, 10 stage of necessary activity, 10 stage of transference of merits to others, and 10 stage of developing Buddha wisdom, and the stage of Buddha. This is final, okay? So 10. 52 stages. Okay, that is a bodhisattva practice. So first is the 10 stage of faith. This is the first. So when you want to practice understand that the picture of ignorance, how it works. In other words, as clear as you can, you have to see structure, how human being is produced, human life. Different aspects of human life is produced. We have to see clearly. It's not necessary to understand completely, but you have to taste it, how it works. Okay? As clear as you can. This is our practice. So, for this, you need the 10 stages. You need the practice to walk 10 steps of faith, like this. There are lots of names here, but I don't want to say. And next, you can walk in 10 steps of 10 steps of security. And then next, you can go through 10 steps of necessary activity. And then the next, the 10 steps of transference of merits to others. Okay, 10 steps of necessary activity is if your personality is very deepened, very naturally, this 10 steps of necessary activity must be required. Naturally, you can do. Okay. Naturally, even though you don't. If you become mature, very naturally, this kind of practice is going. And also, if you go further, in other words, if you have if you go deeper, you know, more deeply, if you go further, to maturity in life, then next is 10 steps of transference of merit to others, means egolessness. Okay? Pre-egolessness. If you do something, just do and put it aside without expecting reward, etc. You just do it. You just give kindness to others. Without attachment, without respecting, without reward. Anyway, just do it. This is a giving merit to others. This kind of a practice coming up naturally. This is very kind. It's really kind, compassionate. And then if you go through this practice, then you can reach first stage of developing Buddha's wisdom, Buddha's seeds. Then you can get into the first stage, first step to Buddha's work. That is called 10 steps of developing Buddha's wisdom. But mentioned by Avasantika Sutra. Okay, Avasantika Sutra explains this 10 stage steps of developing Buddha's wisdom in details. Particular sutra there. Okay? Already you have it in the English version. It's very interesting, Bodhisattva practice. When you reach the first stage, then you can have an opportunity to see overall picture of ignorance. Okay. How it's connect with phenomenal world and noumenon. We can see. But still, it's not perfect. Only Buddha knows. So you have to reach final stage, so-called Buddha, stage of the Buddha. Who knows? Buddha is who? So, only Buddha knows. It's very interesting. For me, it's really interesting. So you never know. But only Buddha knows. The Sotdharma Pundarika says, only Buddha knows. Okay? Yes, it is. It's not mysterious. It's really true. Only Buddha knows. In other words, for example, I knows I. Okay? Eyes knows eyes. as they are means eyes does know what they are. No. But real eyes knows the eyes what they are. But in terms of our knowledge, the system of knowledge is going subject first, we separate subject and object, okay? And then you see the object, then we say, oh yes, I understand. So if I see my eyes, immediately eyes, two eyes there, the one eye and the other eye separate, and then I can see my eyes. But this is not real understanding. So only the eye itself, how the eye itself can know, it doesn't. So I cannot. The eyes, this eye, okay? The eyes don't know. Means Buddha knows. Only Buddha knows. But later, that's why it says the, let me say, Hinayana, okay, followers of Hinayana, with their wisdom, likewise fail to realize this. So it's still a little difficult, you know, to understand. But this seems to understand anyway, but it's not exactly. Hinayana means at this, what you say, person who attained enlightenment through the wisdom of nature, okay, functioning of nature. Different change of seasons, something like that. And also person who attain enlightenment of listening to a voice of nature, so-called Buddha's teaching. Okay. A principle of nature, that those people can be kind of a saint. Okay. But even though they become saint, or enlightened person, but still, it's pretty difficult to know. So next, we have to go to Bodhisattva's practice. Bodhisattva is given to, has a chance to know what it is, but still, it's not perfect. Okay? So we have to go practice constantly until you can reach the first stage of 10 steps of developing of the Buddha's seed, Buddha's world. Anyway, then you can get into the Buddha's world. That is, at that time, first opportunity to know eyes as they really are. You can touch it. You can just really touch. For instance, what is the truth? Truth, you can really taste what the truth is. But it's not perfect. So you can taste it. That's why still, you know, we have an opportunity to taste it. Okay? But the final stage, so-called Buddha, we can really understand. But that is later. It says, the mind through pure in itself nature from the beginning is accompanied by ignorance. Being defiled by ignorance, a defiled state of mind comes into being. But though defiled, the mind itself is eternal and immutable. Only the enlightened ones are able to understand what this means. In other words, real pure nature, so-called absolute. Absolute is as they are. Okay. The absolute means table. Real absolute nature of table as it is, okay? Before and after you are conscious of it, it's there, exactly. Okay? That is called as it isness, we say. But when consciousness try to gain access toward this one, this real absolute is just kind of magnetic, or what to say, elasticity. Okay. If you really prick us, immediately you bounce. Okay. But you sense to the touch, but you don't touch exactly. You sense to touch it, but bounced. You are bounced. Okay. This is a truth itself. So very naturally, mind comes to mind trying to gain access to this absolute and truth, and then come closely to it. And then, if mind touch it, okay, mind becomes calm. But it is bounced. That's why mind starts to move. When the mind starts to move, it goes farther and farther from this. This is always happens. Okay? So you seem to the reach to the end of the termination, the end of the way, okay, travels, so-called terminal stations. But if you are there, you cannot stay there, you have to go somewhere. So very naturally, you start to move, your life starts again. So this is called Aravijñāna. Then you can come very closely to Tathāgatagarbha, so-called absolute, but we cannot stay with it. If you want to stay, we need to scare coming up. Fear. You are not comfortable. So very naturally bounced. Okay. So that's pretty good for us. So very naturally that is called movement of consciousness. Movement start to move. Why that mind bounced, we don't know. This is called ignorance. By means of the ignorance, it's bounced. So called creating waves. How winds and the original nature of the ocean, so called water, touches this, the original nature of the water, and creates waves. We don't know. We don't know this moment. It's touch it, but it doesn't touch it. Anyway, but very closely work together. So that's why it says only the enlightened ones are able to understand what this means. That's why if you become Buddha, Bodhisattva very deeply, very naturally, you become humble. You become very humble. Because the more you know overall picture of the Tathagatagarbha and Aravijñāna working together in peace and harmony smoothly, that time you never know what it is. So you are anyway released in completely nothing to know. And then you can release yourself in so-called emptiness. Very naturally, nothing to hang on. So very naturally, it becomes humble, very humble, and compassionate or kind. So that's why constantly we have to say, only Buddha knows. Okay? You never know. Only Buddha knows. What is called essential nature of the mind? Next, Next paragraph. What is called the essential nature of the mind is always beyond thoughts. Beyond the thoughts. Essential nature of the mind is always beyond the beyond the thoughts. Means constant memories and new ideas and inspirations, mysterious experiences related with something else. You have